The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You're 30 years old. You're 35 years old. Culture's already tried to erase you. And I'm like, these are 40-year-old women. They have urges. They have pleasures. The people I like to center and celebrate are usually from communities and identities that are relegated to the edges of cultural narratives, meaning it's the black women, it's the brown women, it's the fat women, it's the disabled, it's the neurodiverse, it's the chronically ill. I say this carefully and truthfully, I only write men who are feminists. I'm not going to invite someone into this life I'm building who's going to detract from it. I'm not going to invite someone into this life that I'm building who feels like he or she has to diminish me for him or her to feel bigger, just to feel something or to feel like I have something that people have told me I'm supposed to have in this life. You know, people read romance novels and like, oh my gosh, she had 6 orgasms. You know, it's like, that's not realistic. I'm like, it really might not be, honey. But I do want women awake to what they deserve. I do want women awake to what they're worthy of.
There are men who believe that the work that you're doing is actually giving a false sense of confidence to undeserving women.
Yeah.
How would you respond to that?
Hey, lovebirds! Hello! Great to see you.
Nice to meet you too.
Thank you so much for coming, Sam. Yeah. Thanks for coming through.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, I am so excited. Congratulations. Second New York Times best-selling author.
Thank you.
And what I love about your work too is that you take people who are on the margins and you put them center stage. This is their story. It's their love story. Mm-hmm. Why is that so important to you?
You believe it's magic.
They're coming from experiences, communities, identities that are often relegated to the edges of cultural narrative. That's the black women, that's the brown women, that's the fat women, that's disabled, that's neurodiverse, that's chronically ill. And I want to write those experiences to the center because they deserve to be there. And not settle, you know, not settle for less. That they should, I hope, look for a partner who will love them. What I like to say, love them outrageously.
Clearly, we will not be at a shortage of things to talk about. I can't wait, so let's go talk.
Okay.
It's a little bit of a walk.
That's okay. That's okay.
You guys can hold hands again. We don't want to keep it.
You don't want to keep us apart.
Maybe I'll hold the other hand.
This episode is sponsored by loversbyshan.com, a suite of services designed to help you enjoy and refine the journey of loving and being loved. The starring guest of this episode is the brilliant 2-time New York Times bestselling author Kennedy Ryan. Her new book, Can't Get Enough, from the Skyland series, is out now. So go read it, listen to it, and enjoy the episode.
Kennedy Ryan,
welcome to the desert.
If you're not getting my joke, this is a Matrix-inspired location that I've been wanting to use for a really long time. It's close to my house, but it just felt weird for a lot of places. Maybe it's still kind of weird right now.
No, it feels good right now.
But I feel like we're talking about reimagining your reality, that rejecting the reality that's fed to you to get to the one that's really meant for you.
Yeah, that's great.
You are loved outrageously.
I am.
Can you give people a picture of what it feels like to be loved outrageously?
This episode is sponsored by me, because why not? Did you know that Lovers is more than a podcast? It's an entire suite of tools designed to help you reach your intimate potential. Like, there's Shay-I. You can ask my AI anything, or as I call her, Shay-I. Sign up for my weekly newsletter or check out my free resource library of quizzes and worksheets at loversbyshan.com. Want more? Join the Lovers community for $20 a month. This is a space to connect with others who share our passion. Book one-on-one time with me, join weekly classes, and even be a part of the podcast. Okay, that's a whole lot of information, but here's the bottom line. If you are ready to enjoy the journey of creating a euphoric, intimate life as much as you're going to enjoy the destination, then head over to loversbyshan.com. And I'll see you there.
28 years I've been married, and I don't know that we loved each other outrageously from the beginning. I don't think we did. I think it was young. I think we were young. I think there was a lot we didn't know about each other and about life. But now I feel like we've grown into this outrageous love, which is acceptance. There's a symbiosis in our relationship. And what I mean by that is I have a book out now called Can't Get Enough. And one of my favorite lines from it is, let's be good to each other. We as women make sacrifices in our partnerships and over the course of life, whether it's having children and our careers being slowed down. It just depends. But having a partner that respects your dreams, your goals, your ambitions as equal to theirs is a part of being loved outrageously. And I think also, like my husband, like my weight, for example, has fluctuated all throughout my life. And my husband looks at me the exact same way, no matter the weight, you know, and his nickname for me is Gorgeous, and it's always Gorgeous, you know, and I always feel loved and accepted by him physically, emotionally. And I think that we take acceptance for granted. Maybe we take acceptance for granted, but there's a safety inside of a relationship that gives you that, that I have.
Go off, Sam. That's you. Go off.
28 years.
28 Congratulations.
Years. Thank you.
I always say that because, you know, often when somebody stands up and says, I've been married for 28 years, everybody claps.
Yeah.
But we don't know what those 28 years have entailed or what year 28 is like. So
yes,
thank you for the testimony of a beautiful year 28.
Yeah, it has been.
I love that you said loved outrageously, mm-hmm. and then gave the definition of the most basic human rights.
Yes, I know. But you know what? It's funny that you honed in on that, because so often when people talk about, like, I write romance novels, and people are like, oh my gosh, romance novels set like unrealistic expectations. But the thing is, what most women are drawn to at least in my books, is not like the fantasy. It's the basic. It's being loved. It's being having a partner you can trust. It's being respected. And I'm like, that's so basic, you know? And yet I think it feels outrageous because so many women don't have it.
Yes.
Or don't find it.
Let's talk about these fictional men, because they're based on your dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Your husband.
Yeah.
On real life men.
Yeah, in a lot of ways they are. Because it's so funny, because I've had people say, gosh, if there were actually men out there who did these things. And my husband, like in this last book that I wrote, you know, he takes her out on a yacht. My husband hasn't taken me out on a yacht. You know, like I don't know that I care about that. You know, like that to me is trappings. That's the kind of like fantastical part of it. That's the glamour. That's entertainment,
yeah.
You know? It's like when you're reading a book, it's an entertainment experience. But I like for those trappings to be wrapped around something real. And for me, what's real is the devotion that I've seen between my parents. You know, my parents have been married over 50 years and loving each other for 50 years. Not perfect, but together and loving each other. That kind
being
of...
Being good to each other.
Being good to
each other.
To
the best of their capacity at the time.
At the time, yes. And that looks different in each stage of your life. And I think the malleability of a couple, meaning you're going to grow, I'm going to grow, you're going to stretch, I'm going to stretch. We might even stretch in different directions, but I'm committed to this, to a place where I want to stretch with you, I want to grow with you. And I'm not talking about staying in something, because, you know, miserable. That's not it. It's kind of like growing and moving together. But so when I see that kind of devotion, I know that it's possible. And with my husband, I think especially, we have a special needs son. And when I'm talking to special needs parents, like all of us as parents love our kids, of course you do. But sometimes when you're a special needs parent, it's depending on what it requires of you, there's a degree of sacrificial love,
yes,
that comes that you can't really, you can't explain it to someone. You know, it's just kind of like this different category, I think of it as like this kind of sacrificial love, depending on what the situation is. But it affects your marriage. You know, I think that's the part that some people don't talk about, is when you are in this, for us, it was kind of like a pressure cooker.
My son was diagnosed with autism on a Thursday, and the next day my husband lost his job. And I really feel like, I talk about love as like this crucible. You know, I don't know if you remember, like in chemistry in high school, you'd have those like white porcelain dishes and you would put something in it and you would set it on fire. And when you set it on fire, only like the metal, only like the thing that's real remains. That's how I think about love. And so that's what we had. You know, we had this kind of crucible where we had this conflagration of like circumstances, hard circumstances. And I'm talking about like both of our cars being repossessed in the matter of 2 days, and, you know, our having no food and our finding out who your friends are, friends just showing up at the house with groceries because you're having to pay medical bills. And we saw something in each other that we knew we could depend on when things were really hard. And so I think a lot of that makes its way into what I write, you know, when I'm talking about relationships. So
you lit me up in so many different ways. I feel like a little tiki torch right now because this is something I've been battling with a little bit. I'll speak on the last thing that you just said of the concept of like you want a partner who can go through hell with you.
Yes.
And when I heard that initially, I heard it from Cam Newton.
Okay.
Not that in the first time I heard it. When I heard it recently again, and it just like struck me as like an untrue statement because we have therapy, we have tools, and also like, I'm not gonna choose a partner based on how much shit they can withstand.
Yes, yes.
But what you said just kind of clicked and brought it full circle for me, because if the base of our relationship is mutual respect,
yes,
wanting to be good to each other,
yes,
mutual care, a mutual desire to not cause harm,
yes,
and to experience growth together, then when you have that, then that's the real true thing,
yeah,
that cannot be burnt up.
Right.
And those experiences prove to you that that's true.
Yes.
And then it can also fortify and strengthen that initial love and devotion that you have to each other through respect.
Absolutely. Because experiences like that mature you.
But if you don't have that to begin with and you go through some hard stuff,
yeah,
I think that that's where... it can become a toxic thing.
Very much so. And I think, I mean, a lot of people don't survive that. Like a lot of relationships don't survive that.
Or people expect that I can cheat on you, treat you all kinds of ways, and you're meant to stay with me through the hard times, because that's part of what love is.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I wouldn't, that's really key, which is why I said my parents have been together for 50 years and they weren't miserable. You know, I had that, I was behind that curtain to see that they genuinely loved each other. Because I've seen people who stay together for the kids or stay together. I think we grew up, some of us grew up with that, like people just staying together because they were together.
Yes.
And I think that's not something I would advocate, because what's the point of that? And I think there are a lot of people who stumble into relationships from that same place, like I'm supposed to be with someone, or I don't know how to deal with this loneliness. The woman that I'm writing about in this last book, Can't Get Enough, she's 40 years old. She is childless by choice. You know, she's already said, I don't want no kids. And she's also said, I don't want a trash ass man. You know, like, I don't want to. And I was listening to a podcast recently, and there was a woman there, and she was talking about this big, amazing life that she had created. And sometimes, it was actually Tracee Ellis Ross, I was trying to think. Yes, it was such a, with Michelle Obama.
Yes, Michelle Obama.
It was such a good interview. And she was talking about this big, adventurous life that she had built. And that sometimes she would grieve that she didn't have the kids, or grieve that she didn't have the partner. But like, she wouldn't have chosen to bring someone into that who was gonna detract from it.
Yeah.
And that is, it's so true to this character that I wrote, because she's like, I don't want a trash ass man. Like, why would I settle for that? And I think that's one of the big things that I like to amplify in my books, is we don't have to settle. And I think for someone who is married for 28 years, you're married, you have children, like it feels easy for us to say that. And I'm very cognizant of how flippant that could feel to someone who is actually navigating loneliness and actually navigating this dating landscape that feels treacherous to them sometimes. And I don't want to be flippant about it. And I think that the foundation of why women in these books that I'm writing, and women I know in real life, like I think part of the foundation of how you can build that kind of life without a partner, and then like hope, okay, I'd love to have a partner one day. Well, I don't have a partner, I'm not going to invite someone into this life I'm building who's going to detract from it.
Yes.
I'm not going to invite someone into this life that I'm building something, who feels like he or she has to diminish me for him or her to feel bigger, or like squelch my light for them to shine just to feel something, or to feel like I have something that people have told me I'm supposed to have in this life. Not that there won't ever be loneliness, but it's like, what is the other thing? Is the other thing accepting pain, accepting, you know, some pain so that someone else is pleased, so that someone else is satisfied? So
I think what's really beautiful about what you're saying, I'm tempted to say something silly and very cliche, like the world is a mirror, because there's something greater to that. But I'll finish a full thought and come back to what I mean when I say that. But there was a book that I read that's called The New Psychology of Love. And there was a chapter in there that was called The Politics of Attraction and The Politics of Love. And you kind of think that those words don't go together. But essentially what it was saying is that what they mean by politicized is that it's a highly regulated, highly lobbied area of life. And attraction is not attraction. Attraction is about exposure. And so if we're constantly being exposed to the same kind of person who deserves attraction, we build a schema in our mind for that's what attractive is. And for people who are not part of that beneficiary group, they get put into something called the lucky to be loved group, where in essence, it's like, well, you're not in love stories. You're not in movies.
You're not.
So if someone does love you, because it's really them. That's really who's supposed to be loved. So if you find somebody who wants to love you, great. And that does to the psychology of both people. The person who is deemed lucky to be loved accepts bad behavior, accepts mistreatment. And the person who probably would have genuinely loved that person has another thought in their mind of, well, I'm not supposed to love the black woman, the fat woman. I'm not supposed to love the disabled woman. So, I'm attracted to her, but I'm not supposed to. So I'm going to treat her like my side piece and look for who I'm told I'm supposed to be attracted to. And
that's great.
When I say the world becomes a mirror is that if you know in yourself that that is just marketing. It's just marketing. Like, just like the best toothpaste is not Colgate. It's just the one with the most money behind So if that's just marketing and you know the inherent truth that you are deserving of outrageous love, when you are with somebody who is treating you in that way, you can actually shake them and tell them the truth. Like, hey, that all that was bullshit. It's actually okay to let yourself love me as much as you genuinely do. So I, even though it feels like hard to tell that woman, to your point, that like, you know, not only should you be looking for a partner, which can be hard because you are marginalized, look for a partner who treats you like a queen. And they're like, I just need to find somebody. It's like, no,
don't settle.
You can actually teach somebody who would have defaulted to treating you the way that you don't deserve to treat you how you do deserve.
That's fantastic. When I am writing, because I think, and I talk about romance in this way, that a lot of people, when they think about romance, and we kind of alluded to this before, like off camera, a lot of people, in a way, a lot of people think about romance and romance novels, which of course is what I write, as an escape. They think of it as a portal out of life. Like, this is how I'm going to escape my existence. The, you know, mediocrity or the monotony of my existence. And I write romance from a different perspective. I don't think of romance as inherently escapist. I think of romance as a portal into life. And what I think is that if I am writing it thoughtfully and I am writing it from the perspective that we're talking about, where I'm like, I want to model healthy relationships. I want to model self-love as a foundation. If I'm writing from that perspective, it's not an escape from an existence. It is speaking into an existence. Do you know what I mean? It is saying, women, like, look at this. This is a woman. I first of all, I say this carefully and truthfully. I only write men who are feminist. And what, I mean, and people would say, like, a man who is a feminist. A feminist is nothing more than a person who believes in the equality between the sexes. So I don't write heroes who are not feminists. That's baseline. I tend to write older heroines too, which is not something that's common in romance. But if you look at this series that I've written called the Skyland series, they're all 40 years old. You know, they're 40 years old and they talk about their stretch marks and they talk about, you know, menopause, perimenopause. You know, they talk about saggy breasts. Like, there's a realness that's injected into it. And they're talking about the things that 40-year-old women talk about, their kids and all of those challenges that come with it. But I think that culture starts to erase us so early.
Yes.
You're 30 years old. You're 35 years old. Culture's already trying to erase you. And I'm like, these are 40-year-old women. They have urges. They have pleasures. And the thing I love about romance is that it is the only genre that centers women's pleasure. Do you know what I mean? It's like a woman finding her pleasure sexually, emotionally, spiritually, all of that. That is exactly what the story is about, right? And so I'm thinking when I will take Hendrix, who is the heroine of this novel. She is contained, self-contained. And I talk about integrity of character, but I'm not talking about like a moral integrity, because the base word of the word integrity is integer, and that means whole. I'm talking about a wholeness that comes. I'm talking about women who want to make themselves whole, and they want to build an existence that they love, and that there is a wholeness to it. There's a completeness to it. And then when you are searching for a partner, when you're looking for a partner, you're not looking for them to create that sense of contentment and satisfaction for you, so you don't settle for things that they might bring that you would reject and that would be dangerous to you or harmful to you, because you are expecting them to complete this picture. And it's so funny that we're talking about this. Okay, I just went squirrel, you know? Squirrel, you know, and we're off, you know? I have, actually two friends have told me this happened and I don't know how to feel about it. One friend said she was in a relationship with a man who was divorced from his wife and had a kid, and he kept choosing that his ex-wife over her over and over and over again. She was like, I know they have a kid together, but I should just take this. I should just accept this. I should just, it's okay. And she said, I started listening to Can't Get Enough, the audiobook. And she said, by chapter 4, I called him and broke it off. And I was like, what? She goes, yeah. I was like, I deserve better than this. She's like, I'm looking at Hendrix and I'm hearing her talk about her life and how she's not going to accept bad behavior or a trash ass man, you know, just to feel something. And she said, I realized, oh my God, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. And she said, I like paused the audiobook and like called him and was like, I can't do this anymore. And I'm like, I don't know how to feel. I don't want to be breaking up. Well, it's an unhappy home, I guess. I was going to say, I don't want to be breaking up happy homes. I don't want to do that. But I do want women awake to what they deserve. I do want women awake to what they're worthy of. And sometimes it's making difficult decisions, you know, where you are cutting off something like a relationship that is almost a habit. Like, I'm supposed to be in a relationship. I'm supposed to be partnered with someone, as opposed to, is this the person that I should allow into my life and into my space? And I always say that when I am writing a woman, I build this woman, you know, as a character, and then I build a man who's worthy of her. You know, this is a fantastic woman. Who deserves her? You know, and that's where I'm like, I'm not writing a man who's not a feminist, because a man who deserves her would never think her dreams, goals, and ambitions or needs are beneath his or should be subjugated to his.
This is, now I can definitely give you a cap for that woman. I'm thinking about what I love about Hendrix is she has a, like, don't fumble the baddie mentality.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of women are raised to think that.
Yeah.
And I think you were raised to think that. Mm-hmm. I actually had Nina Westbrook as a guest, and it was a really profound conversation, because I have a friend whose name is Kevin. He's a gay man, and he's the most gay man that's ever gayed.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him one day, I'm like, Kevin, when did you come out of the closet? And he was like, I was never in the closet.
Yeah.
Like, my whole life, I've just been like this, and I've been accepted and embraced. And that's radical.
Yes, it is.
Because you're
radical.
Like, you're supposed to self-hate, deny yourself, pretend to be somebody else, and then come into this. And so in chatting with Nina, you know, she's married to a basketball player, an all-star, very famous basketball player. And she has so much self-belief, self-confidence, mm-hmm. self-esteem, and just a clarity on how incredible she is.
Yes.
There is not a single ounce of lucky to be loved in her.
Mm.
And it felt as outrageous as somebody who's never been in the closet before.
Yes.
I am my own person. I'm that girl. It started with my dad. Like, he was embarrassingly, like, my biggest hype man. And he kind of instilled in me that I was the best thing since sliced bread. And as an adult, it taught me to be comfortable and confident in who I am and what I bring. To the world. I also work really hard to be someone that I can be happy with and do the things that I want to do. And then Russell is like, he's anything goes. You want to wear your hair like that? Go for it. Looks amazing. You look great. You don't want to get dressed? Put some sweats, like, let's go. And he's like, he's so supportive in every single way. There are people who would constantly comment and still do to this day think that he should be with someone else.
What do you mean? Like who?
I don't fit the look or the style or the persona or whatever of a basketball wife in a lot of people's eyes. I mean, a lot of people who don't, like, I'm not, it's just, they don't get it. But that is very much so a thing. And that was never a thing for us, though, or for me.
The fact that that feels radical for us,
yeah.
You know, it says so much about what's normative, you know, in this culture and what it tells us. But I love that there are people who are having that experience. I hope more people have that experience that way.
That's, and then your book is inspiring people to know that that's the only way.
I hope so. Like, I really, really hope so. And it's interesting because sometimes men will hear about my books or books like mine, and they will say that these are unrealistic expectations. And I think that because we live in a patriarchal structure, anything that centers women discovering that, believing that, and specifically for romance, it's primarily women who write it. It's primarily women who run it. Anything like that, that centers women that way, is going to be, there's gonna be disdain. There's gonna be a denigration to it because it's for women, it's by women, it centers women, and it encourages us to figure things out about our own pleasure. You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, people read romance novels and like, oh my gosh, she has 6 orgasms. You know, it's like, that's not realistic. I'm like, it really might not be, honey. But the point is figuring out what you want, you know, and how, and not settling even in that area for something that feels like, you know, less than you are supposed to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On the orgasm point, I was saying to you, I was showing you my bookshelf and telling you how, and I bought all of the books that I used to read as Bibles in my teen years. And your books and Tia's books have been an invitation to come back to romance.
Yes.
And I've entered back into romance by way of 50 Shades or even by way of some Colleen Hoover.
Yeah.
And those kind of felt like the same thing I experienced in my teens.
Okay.
Where it's this completely unrealistic depiction of women's sexuality in particular.
Okay.
How women's bodies function, how most women experience pleasure. Mm-hmm. And that sets you up for feeling like you are broken.
Yes.
Because if your body doesn't, like in Coldest Winter Ever, she had sex for the first time and he didn't get but 2 pumps in. And she was on the floor melting into an orgasm.
I want to have my brother-in-law, who is a professional voice actor, read some excerpts from these books that deeply shaped my opinion of my body.
The Coldest Winter Ever by Sista Solja. I rode that dick like a professional jockey. All the energy in my body started running wild and high, then moved to the center and released. My body shook, then relaxed. I slid down his body onto the floor. Oh, no, you don't. Not until I get mine's. He mounted me on the floor doggy style and started giving it to me from the back. 2 orgasms does the body good.
And so I'm like, okay, cool. This is what sex is.
Yes.
And when it wasn't that, I was like, I guess there's something wrong with me. And so I think that I felt let down by these books that, because I didn't have good sex education. Mm-hmm. I didn't have those honest conversations anywhere. And oftentimes, especially for me as a young, you know, person, both my parents are Caribbean, so they did their absolute best. But when they saw this natural interest in me of learning about this, it scared them.
Right.
So
right.
I didn't want to scare my parents.
Yeah.
So the only way that I could enact this interest was in private.
Right.
And so my library card was essentially my pathway to
yes.
a world that
yes.
I had no other way of figuring out.
Yeah.
But then when I learned later on that it was feeding me like lies and misinformation and mixed truths and setting me up on a path to be disappointed with what I had, I was like, these books are not good.
Yeah, yeah. I could see how you would say that. I think that when I was growing up and I was reading Harlequins and there was never talk about a vibrator. There was
never talk
about a woman figuring out how to pleasure herself. That just was not, and it's because the man was so perfect and he was so intuitive intuitive until to how to please this woman that was never necessary. And I think I grew up in a similar way, in the sense that I come from like a faith household, you know, and I had to sneak and read romance novels. My parents are both preachers. So you grow up, and I grew up very sheltered, and I didn't know very much about sex. And even reading romance novels early, it definitely didn't prepare me. And so that's something that my husband and I really had to navigate in the beginning, because I didn't know very much about sex. You know what I mean? And what I thought I knew wasn't realistic. It's kind of like what you're saying, and you kind of have to figure out what does your body need and how are you going to find that. And so I really like in romance novels when women talk about not being satisfied. Hendrix talks about, you know, at one point she's like, this guy was big and all this and I still wasn't satisfied. He doesn't even understand there's talk about men not understanding the anatomy of how we find pleasure and the frustration with that. And that, you know, so all of those conversations, I think in the romance novels I was reading when I grew up, those things were not happening because there was a veneer.
Yes.
Kind of like this veneer over what that is. And I do think that romance novels, a lot of romance novels have changed. And I think, yes, definitely, Tia and I are definitely leaning into what's more realistic in that way. So I hope that it's helpful. So many women tell me, I just, you know, it has changed my sexual relationship with my husband because we were having some frank conversations.
Yes.
And she's like, I just gave him the book and was like, just read chapter 4. You know, so that's kind of fun, actually. It's kind of fun. So because those are things I had to figure out for myself, too, and for my body and for my relationship.
And thank you for taking that information and sharing with everybody else, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a way that doesn't usually get told. And yeah. I think some people think that it's not as sexy, but I think it's incredibly sexy.
Yeah, even, you know, it's so funny because when I was growing up reading romance novels, there was no talk of condoms. There was no talk of contraception. It was just this kind of anesthetized experience that was kind of like hazy, you know, this hazy fever dream, you know? And so some people are like, do you feel like it kind of breaks up the sex scene when he says, oh, I need to get a condom, or oh, I need to, I have characters talk about, you know, have you been tested? You know, all of those things, I feel, kind of strip some of that away and inject some realism into those interactions.
I'm really excited right now because I get to do another Matrix reference. Because I'm going to sit here and play devil's advocate.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the red pill community?
I'm familiar with the from the Matrix, like those.
Yes.
But I don't know that I knew that it was a community.
Well, Kevin Samuels became famous for this average at best clip.
Okay.
Where a woman was essentially talking about all that she desired in a man. And he was like, why do you think you're going to get that man? You are average at best.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, yes, yes. His name didn't ring a bell, but when you said that and he said, I did know it, and you put it. Yes. Okay. I'm familiar. Yes.
So I'm curious because there's going to be some men who are going to listen to this episode. They won't listen to the episode. They'll hear clips of this episode.
Yeah.
And they'll want to be like, why are you telling women to expect more when they're not deserving of that? Why are you telling women? And their complaint is most of these women are not even bringing to the table what they're asking for the table to be set with. Ooh. So when there are men who believe that the work that you're doing is actually giving a false sense of confidence to undeserving women, how would you respond to that?
First, I guess I would ask, what is deserving? Like, what are you measuring deserving by? Because from my experience, when men talking, a lot of times when men are talking about what a woman deserving, often it's based on how they are processing their physical appearance. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and they are saying, oh, you're, because they talk about it like this, you're a 4. Why are you expecting a 10? You know, I mean, it's like that. That's not going to be your person, you know? And part of, I think, there's a reciprocity where I see you and you see me, like, I think the worth is going to come in that someone's going to see you. Someone's going to recognize the worth in you. And so I don't care if someone who doesn't deserve me doesn't think that I deserve them. Do you know what I mean? I think we have to talk about what is your base for worth. What is your base for deserving? Because if you're saying to me you're a 4, why would you think that you deserve a 10? I don't even want the energy that you're bringing. I am looking for someone who's going to really see who I am, you know, and I'm going to really see who they are. Because at the end of the day, that recognition, I think that's part of the partnership. That's part of the equity, is not like I am as attractive as you are or I am as smart as you are, but that we get each other. There's something about us that can bring this oneness. And what I mean by oneness is, in a partnership, of course, you're still your own person and I'm still my own person, but I see your value and you see my value. Like, I'm not looking for someone, and also I'm not looking for someone who is even asking the question, do they deserve? Do you know what I mean? Like, for me, that's a red flag in the first place. You are, you know, weighting a woman's worth based on whatever arbitrary factors you have come up with to decide if a woman is worthy or not. Sir, you can step to the side. Like, you're not even in consideration. And it doesn't matter to me, or shouldn't matter to me, that I'm not someone you would consider, because that just means we shouldn't be together.
Yeah, so, bitch, this is not figure skating. Your score does not actually determine whether or not, yes, I get the prize or not.
Absolutely. I'm on the ice. You know, I'm on the ice. And I'm looking for someone who sees me. And I think that is what sometimes we overlook, is the value of someone who really sees who you are. Because if they really see who you are, they'll really see what you need. And they'll really see what, and if you see who they are, you really see what they need. If you really have a foundation where you love them, you're gonna figure out, how can I be a part of them being happy? How can I be a part of them, you know, getting what they need? Not in a way like I'm completely incomplete, but like we need each other. When I talk about wholeness, it's not in the sense that I don't need anybody. It's not in the sense of isolation. You know, because one of the things that I really emphasize, especially in the Skyland series, is community, is friendship. You know, I talk about these three women who these three books are based on in the Skyland series. They talk about each other as platonic soulmates, you know? And I think when I was younger, especially, I talk about how, and this might be like off on a tangent, but I talk about when I wrote Before I Let Go, which is the first book in this series. It was the first book I ever wrote. I wrote it 15 years ago, and it didn't publish until 2022, November of 2022. And I always talk about that book as the book that was waiting for me to grow up, because there was so much. It's such a heavy book in some ways. You know, it's a woman who loses a child, late pregnancy, goes into a deep depression. They end up divorcing, all of that. And when I first wrote that book, it had all of the hurt, but none of the healing. You know, and so I got to live another 15 years as a wife, as a mom, as a friend, as a sister. And when I went back to that book that I thought was trash, and my husband was actually the one who was like, no, babe, really, it's salvageable, go to it. And it's the book that changed my life and it changed my career ultimately. But when I went back to it, I was like, oh, wait a minute, she's got all this pain. This girl needs to go to therapy, Jesus. You know, because I, at that point, was navigating my own depression, you know, and I was in therapy. And then I got on antidepressants. So that's what informed that book. But also, she didn't have any friends. I was like, where are this girl's people? Because so much healing happens in the context of community. And so I had to create a friend group. You know what I mean? A support system. And that is part of having a full, adventurous, exciting life, is having your people, having people you're sharing it with, whether it's a partner or not, just not doing life alone. So when I talk about wholeness and I talk about completeness, I'm not talking about isolation. You know, I want to be really careful to make that distinction. I'm not saying that you are completely self-reliant, because that's not what it is. It's about wholeness is like, I'm happy with who I am, and I'm constantly growing, constantly building, constantly evolving and self-actualizing, but in the context of community. community, with friends, with family, with people I love, support groups, all of those things are part of a whole full life. So I just think in culture, there's so much emphasis on romantic love. Not that it's not important, not that it can't be amazing, not that it can't be fulfilling, but it's not the only thing.
Yes.
It's not the only thing.
It's a yes and.
Yes, it's a yes and. And it's something beautiful. I mean, as obviously as someone who writes romance for a living and who's been married for 28 years, I am an advocate. I think I am married to the love of my life. I am married to my best friend. I'm very blessed in that way. But I like to think, that if I wasn't, you know, if I wasn't married to this amazing guy, if I didn't have this amazing kid, I could still, because I know who I am, I know what I'm capable of, I could still build a full, satisfying life without him. And I hope that he could still build a full, satisfying life without me. And that when we find each other, we are great versions of ourselves. Not perfect, but actualizing, evolving. I want to be with someone who is constantly like, how do I get better? How do I grow? How do I improve? Like, and I'm not looking for you to do that for me. I'm not looking for you to just make me happy, but I'm already on that quest. And we can be on that quest together. Like, we can walk that path together without me creating some kind of toxicity because I'm so dependent on you for it, or these expectations where I expect you to meet every need. And when you can't meet my every need, which you're not even made to meet my every need, it feels like a failure. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, you're not meeting my every need. I wasn't designed to meet your every need. Oh my gosh, it's such a failure. Our marriage is a failure because I'm not getting everything I need from you. You were never supposed to get everything from me. You know, humans are not, that's not what this is. All of my satisfaction is not locked in one human being. That is an aspect of my existence, which is romantic. But there's all of these other facets that go so often undeveloped, underdeveloped, because we're so pushed toward romantic love.
So beautifully said. And I had a final question for you, which you already answered, which in essence kind of gave me the aha, but the gift of what your work does. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this before, how I made a transition in my work, mm-hmm. and maybe you made a transition yes. in yours. Like, it's not quite the same, but what I hear is that what's really easy to do and sometimes very satisfying to do is to call out.
Yeah.
Right? To call out men are trash, men are yes, this, men are yes. that, women are trash, women are this. The red pill community is essentially a version of that. So, but it's the calling in to mm-hmm. be like, hey, let's talk for a second. Yeah. And then calling up. I see
yes.
better for you.
Yes.
And there is better for you.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you how you're calling up women, mm-hmm. you know, who feel very called in by you, who do mm-hmm. not feel called out by you.
When you talk about calling up, I'm just like, don't ever settle. Don't settle for someone who's not going to respect you. Don't settle for someone who's not going to love you outrageously, whatever that means to you. You know, don't settle for someone who is going to expect you to subjugate or sideline your dreams and your ambitions so that they could get theirs done. You know, don't, that person, they might think they love you, like that's a version of love, but that does not have your best interest at heart. Mm-hmm. You know, and I go back to that line, let's be good to each other. So when you find someone like that who sees your dreams and your ambitions as important, it's actually, it can be pretty rare, you know?
But real.
But real. And just because it's rare, doesn't mean you should settle for something that is mediocre.
Yes, I say it to women all the time because what ends up happening, I'll give a final thought here because I talk to you all day, but a lot of women, because they've only experienced microaggressions,
yeah,
outright
yeah.
aggressions, yeah. minimization, degradation. So when they get with a partner who gives them the outrageous love,
yes,
but they may not feel outrageously loving towards the other person.
Yeah.
It's just that thing isn't there.
Yeah.
There is this sort of lucky to be loved thing that comes back in of like, well, they're nice, so I should stick with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not that you have to stay with someone just because they give you these
yes.
things. It's
yes.
great to be with people who prove that it's real.
Yes.
And that if that's real, it's also real that you could feel that way with somebody
with someone else,
that you're
yeah.
also lit up by.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
This is great.
Well, speaking of the things that people that you think about when you write for, you just are on tour right now.
Yeah. Yes.
You just made the New York Times bestselling list for the second time, baby. And sometimes I hate this question because it's like, this is the North American culture of like, what's next? What's next?
Yeah,
you're
next.
Yeah. I just went to the Olympics of book writing and I got gold.
But see, what you have to understand about me is that I am a what's next person.
Okay, so then I'm going to ask you, what's next?
We are really working hard. Before I Let Go, this Skyland series is in development for television at Peacock. I'm working on my next book, which is it's a book called Score, which is the second book in my Hollywood Renaissance series, which I love writing about creatives. It's a bipolar, bisexual heroine. I'm really digging into I talked about writing from from the margins to the center, really digging into those people that I'm not seeing very much in romance. And I love writing about mental health. I love writing about especially those like profiles, because I definitely are not seeing, that as much. So I love the research that goes. My background is journalism, so I'm constantly reading. I take master classes when I'm writing about, whatever that vocation is. So the intellectual curiosity part of this job, where I get to research and I get to take master classes and I get to do all these things, is a driving force for me. So I am really, really loving that. And I had to shut it off because I don't really know when to turn the research off. But I'm having a good time writing that. And then I'm hoping I get to rest a little bit. It's been a harrowing pace. And I have one more event in Atlanta next week. And then I'm going to take some time, with my family, with my son, with my husband, and, fill my cup so that I can pour.
Yes. I loved even hearing that, because when you said harrowing place, I thought you first said heroin place.
Oh.
And I think you deserve a heroin pace. We're like, yes. What is the pace that you would write for the hero of your book, right? Like, how would she get to enjoy and be in the now?
And exactly.
So I'm wishing a heroin pace for you.
Yes, thank you. And the self-care, I'm always writing about self-care. And people are always like, oh, you must take such good care of yourself. And I'm like, girl, I try.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it looks great on you. You look fantastic. You're doing incredible, game-changing, historical things.
Oh, gosh.
And more.
Kennedy, what a refreshing and thought-provoking conversation. Thank you. And if you want to say thank you to her as well, listen or read the New York Times best-selling Skyland series, including the newest book, Can't Get Enough, and follow Kennedy on social media for exciting news about her books being adapted for TV. And while we're talking about exciting things, up next, I'm bringing you into the Lovers community, where we talk about this conversation more in depth. And I'm inviting in a brand new host who happened to really resonate with this episode. And that is my graphic designer and a fellow sex educator, Yancy Cherry.
I'm someone who is actively centering herself because I'm from the margins. I feel like every episode of Lovers have quotables. And to me, that was the one that really stuck out to me, especially as a Black queer woman. This is just representation that we need, and it's just really heartwarming to see someone who does that with so much love and empowerment. And on that, I would be very curious to hear your thoughts on the episode.
When Shannon, Kennedy, Ryan were talking about the lucky to be loved category and who falls into that category, and I think there are a lot of identities that can resonate with that, and it made me think about, like, if that's a schema that I have and like a mindset that I have, like, how am I taking that and approaching dating? And how does that like dictate what I think I should be accepting in a relationship? And what are some examples of that?
When I think about the narratives that that's kind of like we've been fed, I took some time after watching it just to think, like, why do I give them so much credit? And I do think it's okay to like create an infrastructure or create a life that feeds you, and just to not credit the things that don't feed you, especially because when people do follow all the rules or fall into like the standard, they're not necessarily rewarded for like walking such a narrow path. So it doesn't even make sense to like worry yourself about what you don't fulfill it for other people.
I think that's really powerful, especially when you talk about desirability politics. Again, like that representation, and also talking about standards. Because it's easy to, just like you said, Denise, it's easy to be like, well, I'm just happy to be here. Hi, guys. But to really take up your space and to own your standards and be like, no, I deserve more than that. When Kennedy was saying that her friend was reading the book and said, you know what? The man I've been that's been, you know, fumbling around, fuck this man. Let's just, I'm out. Being empowered to make those choices and having that agency, I think it's so powerful and beautiful.
Traditionally, from terms of dating apps analytics, Black women and Asian men are the least swiped on. And Asian men are the least swiped on because they are associated with femininity, with weakness, with beta personality traits. And what I love about what's happened probably in the past 5 years or so is that with the rise of like BTS and some of like more of those like pop groups, they've almost like leaned into that and made it sexy and made it cool. It's not that there's anything wrong with you or that you're less beautiful, less capable, less worthy. It's just that there's just hasn't been marketing done on your behalf. And I just love that Kennedy took that agency and not only took it for herself, but is offering that gift to the people who need it the most.
I feel to me that also ties with the notion of radical self-acceptance that she was talking about. I'm me unapologetically in my fatness, in my Blackness, in my queerness, in my disabledness, whatever it is, I am accepting myself, and I'm only accepting people who have the same mindset and who hold themselves to the same standards. So I would be very curious to hear, what does radical self-acceptance mean to y'all, and what would that look like?
I once heard someone say, dating is knowing your audience, and like, no, like this idea of like knowing who's for you and what's for you and vice versa. And like this radical acceptance, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be so wrapped up in the aesthetic of what something looks like. If you accept yourself and vice versa, why, if it connects, then why can't it just be? And this idea of like reciprocity, of like giving your all to someone and vice versa, just like we do in friendship, even if something doesn't work out, there's like a growth that can be had and like steps that you can be made and learn about yourself.
You attract how you treat yourself, pretty much. Like you attract how you treat yourself. So I think just I'm trying to be more aware of loving myself first, and whether that's affirming and, you know, I feel like that just will bring whoever is meant to be in my like high vibration in that moment. You know, whoever that is going to come, because I'm doing it for myself.
For me, it's definitely having unconditional love for self. And unconditional love to me is just literally saying, like, you exist, so therefore you're valuable, priceless, irreplaceable. That's it, period. You ain't got to do nothing to prove it. You ain't got to do nothing for nobody to prove that. And once you decide that, and once you know that you're inherently valuable, then it's all about celebration after that.
Wow, this was such an amazing conversation, and this calls it for the public segment of the Lovers recording for this episode, and we're going to dive deeper and continue the conversation in the community. If you want to be a part of conversations like these, go to loversbyshan.com/community and tap in, because we're doing that every week. All right, see you, lover.
Big shout out to the Lovers by Shan community. This is a space that I created for people who love love. It's for those of us who are passionate about reaching our intimate potential. On my site, you're gonna find an AI trained on 20 years of my work where you can ask any questions. You'll also find free quizzes and resources, plus a place to sign up for my weekly newsletter, and last, but certainly not least, information on the Lovers by Shan community. If you wanna be a part of intimate conversations just like the one you just saw, join the waitlist, and hopefully I'll meet you soon, lover.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.